This presentation has been previously broadcast.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, happy Taco Tuesday. Good morning to you. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Speaking of weekends, of course, this was the weekend in which we celebrated on the 4th of July our nation's independence from England. And it's always been, and I would say this is true for most people, probably true for you, it has always been a time of patriotism. This country's got its problems, there's no question about that, but we still love our country. And you still, I hope anyway, like all the rest of us do, you love the great things about the United States of America. Are there some bad things? Yeah, there are. Are there some great things about any given person? Yes. Are there some bad things about any given person? Yes. So the country, in a way, is kind of a mirror, if you ask me, of you and me. You know, we're a mixed bag. You may be mainly good. You may be almost entirely good, but there's still some bad there. And over the course of the history of this country, there has been plenty of good, but also plenty of bad. So we take the two together and we still love our country. It's kind of like loving your family, isn't it? You know, you don't necessarily like, or at least like as much, every member of your family as you might other members, but you still love them. And you still enjoy and celebrate the family togetherness and what it means to be a family. That's what 4th of July is all about, if you ask me. At least that's how I've always looked at it. But not everybody looks at it that way. So the New York Times, for its part, it published a piece, and this is courtesy of the Daily Wire for bringing this up here. The New York Times, they received backlash over the weekend because they published a piece portraying the American flag as controversial because of how many conservatives embrace the national emblem. So stop and think about this for a minute. If you, I don't know, let's say on your Facebook page you display an American flag, or if you have in some other public way an American flag, more and more now, at least according to the New York Times, that's a sign that you are not progressive, you are not forward-thinking, you're certainly not liberal, you're not on board with many of the trends and the social dictates that are running amok nowadays. And so the American flag itself, did I say American? I didn't mean to say American. The American flag itself is becoming, in the minds of many people in this country, an emblem of what's wrong with this country. And I would say there's plenty wrong with that view in itself. So according to the New York Times, today, flying the flag from the back of a pickup truck or over a lawn is increasingly seen as a clue, albeit an imperfect one, to a person's political affiliation in a deeply divided nation. This is according to the New York Times. What was once a unifying symbol, there is a star on it for each state after all, is now alienating to some. Its stripes now fault lines between people who kneel while the Star-Spangled Banner plays and for those for whom not pledging allegiance is an affront. The report noted that a recent survey by YouGov found that 66% of Republicans said they associate the flag with their own party, while only 34% of Democrats say the same. The following are some of the responses that the Times received over their report. Jesse Kelly tweeted, "Back when I ran for Congress, I'd go knock on doors to get votes. Never walk by a house with an American flag. Why? Because that meant there's about a 90% chance that a Republican lives there." Who is this? Same guy. He adds, "The entire Democratic base is a conglomerate of groups who hate America. The media and Hollywood, in an attempt to help Democrats, spread the message that America is bad and must be brought down." Now, I'm reading to you what they're saying. And there's a wide variety of opinion on this issue, as you might imagine. A lot of people agree with this idea that the American flag is a sign of the problems in this country as opposed to the signs of the greatness in this country. Former acting director of national intelligence Richard Grenell tweeted, "They hate America. Stop paying these condescending elites money." And they go through a list here of predominantly conservative people who are expressing their own consternation over the fact that there's a lot of antipathy now toward the American flag, and flying the flag is a sign that you're probably a problem person. at least for the people on the left. Former CIA officer Brian Dean Wright, he tweeted, "Flying the flag equals Republican equals bad. That's the left's message here, and is designed to denigrate America in hopes of replacing it with woke America. Denigrate free America and replace it with woke America." So I don't know what your experience has been with this. By the way, my name, Patrick Madrid. My number is 888-914-9149. I don't know what your experience is with this, but I've noticed in probably maybe the last year or so, something I never really understood. It didn't really click with me, and I never really thought about it until the last week or so when I saw it and I thought about it. So what does this mean? And I'm talking about American flags that sometimes are flying in the front yard of a home or they're in some other place, but they're all blue. Well, blue and white. So there's no red in those American flags. And I remember thinking, that's odd. What does that mean exactly? And I never really bothered to think about it. And in the last week or so, when I saw another one and then another one, of course, leading up to the 4th of July weekend, people were flying flags. And I stopped and I thought about it. I said, what does that mean exactly? And then it dawned on me. Red is the popular color ascribed to Republicans, people on the right. Blue is the popular color ascribed to Democrats, people on the left. And so to fly an American flag, as I would see more and more, and I'm sure you've seen these too, it seemed to me that what it was saying is we want an America without those people in it. Imagine if, let's say, there were an American flag that had no blue in it, and it was just red and white. So the blue field where the stars are right now was no longer blue, but let's say that that was now red. What kind of message do you think that would send? Do you think people would be irked by that? Do you think people would say, wait a minute, are you saying that I'm not welcome here in the United States of America, or that I'm not represented by this flag? I think some people would say, yeah, that's what we mean. Now, I get the impression that although it's not stated in so many words, that that is the subtle message that's given by people who fly a flag, an American flag, that has no red on it. It's a little thing, and it escaped my attention for lo this last year or so. So I'm not trying to blow it into something bigger than it really is, but maybe it's a symptom of the problems that we face. And I don't fault the New York Times, even though what they said I find offensive, by suggesting that the American flag now somehow represents conservatism, or it represents white supremacy, or it represents, fill in the blank here. I reject all of those notions. The United States flag represents all of us, and that's how we should all see it. So every time now when I see one of these American flags, it's all blue. I feel as though, I've got it figured out now. I realize that that's what it's saying. Now, if somebody has an American flag that's all blue and you fly one of those, please, if I am misunderstanding your motive, please let me know what your motive is. I'm not sure what the motive could be to change the color of the American flag to remove one of its principal colors. Maybe I'm wrong. 888-914-9149.
Hey, Patrick. So yeah. Is this, I'm curious about this flag. Is it kind of a black and white flag with a blue line in the middle?
Is that the one that supports police? Because
that's right. That's the Blue Lives Matter cause. Okay.
I've seen those too, but maybe so what I saw this past week was somewhat different. I don't know. Okay. I didn't look too closely. Now, obviously, I think it goes without saying that I support law enforcement and our military. So if that's the reason behind somebody flying a flag that's all blue, I get it, and I support the cause, that's for sure. But even still, Cyrus, I'm not comfortable with modifying the flag to fit a particular cause.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause the flag transcends all of those causes.
That's right.
I believe.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because I had been aware of it, but I was never really thinking about that in context, politically speaking. And you know why I thought this? Because one town that's not far from where I live is extremely liberal, and the majority of people there are liberal, whatever that may mean. And it was predominantly in that town, in these neighborhoods, that I was seeing these flags. So I wonder, maybe there's a possibility that what might have started off as the Blue Lives Matter flag was seen as, oh, we can repurpose this for a different reason. Anyway, thanks for that. And I do believe that this is the flag, I'm saying, is higher than, it transcends all of these other issues. What if, for example, pro-life people started, instead of the stars on the American flag, what if they put little bodies of unborn babies? I would object to that. I would say that's a misuse of the flag. It's taking the flag in a direction that is harmful and detrimental to it, even though I'm very pro-life and you all know that. Now, as an aside, before we get to the phone calls, this being reported widely over the weekend, five players on the U.S. women's soccer team, they refused to face the American flag while a veteran who happened to be 98 years old was playing the national anthem on his harmonica.
Hey, Patrick, can I just lightly play his harmonica while you're
I didn't know we had that. Yeah, let's play it.
All right, okay. So go ahead. Continue your story.
Let's play. Yeah, that sounds good. So this was in
World War II veteran.
Let's just listen. Okay, so that's Harmonica Pete Dupre playing the national anthem before one of these women's soccer matches. This was in Japan. Miyazaki, Japan is where they were playing. And as he's playing and as the rest of the team is respecting the American flag, as athletes do, or at least used to, five of them turned away. And that, as you can imagine, caused a real ruckus. Now, this in itself is nothing new. Colin Kaepernick and all of the associated controversies with the flag and the national anthem. We've been dealing with this now for years. But this is yet another example of what I'm talking about. And I wanted to raise it to your attention simply because this is just the day or two after the 4th of July. And the idea of the country and what we're all about and where we're headed has been on most people's minds. I'm sure it's been on yours. And it's worthy of consideration. 888-914-9149. Yes, sir.
When I saw the story, it made me so sad and angry. This man, how old is he? 94?
90-something.
90-something. And the sacrifices that he made and the friends that he lost and then the disrespect he's shown by his own countrymen. Disgusting.
You know, to me, those five players and the other people who do this kind of thing. No, we'll let him finish. Let's just let him finish. There's so much I'd like to say on this issue. And I'd like to hear from our listeners as well. And there are plenty of other things I want to talk about. But the whole idea of where is this country going? Are we going up? Are we going down? Are we going sideways? Are we getting better? Are we getting worse? I saw video, you may have seen this, of a Russian, well, in this case, it would be a Soviet, I think it was like a general in the Soviet army. This is going back to the early 1980s, before the fall of the Soviet Union. And he was doing an interview in English because he was, you know, fluent in English. And he was giving an interview in which he was describing what he foresaw as the dissolution or the, you know, the dissolving of the United States of America. And he said the tensions and the problems that the people have will only serve to divide them further. And if it continues, then it would get to the point where they couldn't stand united at all. And I remember when I first saw that video, it might have been maybe 10 years ago, and I thought, Soviet propaganda. No, that'll never happen. That won't happen here. But I tell you, the more things go, the more I wonder. 888-914-9149. If you have a thought about that, or it could be anything else, give me a call, 888-914-9149. We'll go to Marie now in Minneapolis. Hi, Marie.
Good morning. I just wanted to chime in. I'm calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota, so you know the condition and the pulse here in
You've
Minneapolis.
You've been in the news lately, haven't you, in the last year or so?
Yeah. We are in the news, for sure, and we could use all the prayers possible.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to say that when I have a little short conversation opportunity, I use Dr. Bill Bennett, Dr. William Bennett, who was the Secretary of Education for Ronald Reagan. Mm-hmm. He said, if you want to test the integrity of a country, you only have to give it the gate test, G-A-T-E, apply the gate test.
Okay.
When the gate goes up, do people run in or do they run out?
Yeah, right.
And
like the Iron Curtain that people were desperately trying to get over to the west side. Nobody from the west was trying to get into the eastern part of Berlin, that's for sure.
Exactly. So it's kind of a mic drop. I just say that, people go, well, obviously people run into the United States, mm-hmm. therefore, then they have their own thought process, and I usually duck.
Yeah.
So the gate test,
point.
That's my, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Very interesting. The gate test. I had not heard it put that way before. Yeah, Bill Bennett, he was the guy who started K-12. That's the homeschooling option for those who are interested. Let's go next to Brian in Pittsburgh. Good morning, Brian.
Hi, Patrick. Just a quick comment. I fly my flag. I'm probably mm-hmm. center-right politically.
Okay.
I'm a Christian. I think we lack nuance, and I think particularly in the church we lack nuance in our thinking. I think we fall into that trap of it's either black or it's white. And I think if we're going to remain united, you spoke about the Soviet propaganda. I've heard that mm-hmm. for years, calling for the end of America. It's going to happen, mm-hmm. they say. The church has to get more comfortable with nuanced thinking about our culture. Now, I'm not talking about compromise. You know, there are moral issues that we do not compromise on. Mm-hmm. But in other ways, whether it's race, racism, other issues. And I think we fall into the same trap that the culture does, that, oh, you have this, you have a police flag up. You have the American flag up. You don't have the flag up. I mean, I fly my flag. That doesn't make me a Trumper. Although I agree with some of his policies, whatever they were. Pro-life, mm-hmm. so on and so forth. So, you know, I hope this is making sense. We as the church need to be more nuanced in our thinking.
Can you give me an example of what you mean? Because I want to make sure that I'm following you.
Specifically, you know, you talk about abortion. Abortion is morally wrong, period. But there are issues with abortion in that young women or women, period, that are faced with abortion are facing horrific circumstances. And I don't think the church really addresses the other side of the issue of the man involved with the pregnancy. I think a lot of the emphasis is on, I think the responsibility is not stressed enough with the men. There are cases of abuse or abandonment, and the weight and the horror that a woman must face. And I don't think the church does enough with addressing the other side.
Let me play devil's advocate.
I really don't, Patrick. Go ahead, buddy.
Okay, fair enough. I really do. Now, I'm not trying to be querulous, believe me. I really am anxious to hear from everybody on this issue. But honestly, I think it's exactly the opposite. I think the Catholic Church does far more than any other organization, governmental or non-governmental, anywhere, certainly in this country, but anywhere in the world. And the Catholic Church, in its day-to-day life, we're talking at the local level, the homes for unwed mothers, the orphanages, the free medical clinics, the free food, and many other services. I'm thinking of St. Vincent de Paul, and the outreaches on a day-to-day basis all around the country, 24/7, seeking after the health and well-being of these moms and the children. Now, could bishops or priests be preaching more from the pulpit about the role of fathers? Yeah. I wouldn't say that maybe we have, I wouldn't say that we have an overabundance of messages from our clergy on that issue, but there are many things to talk about. I've heard some rather stirring sermons on topics related to that, but I wonder how many of the guys who are actually causing this pressure with the girlfriend or the wife or the daughter, I wonder how many of them are actually sitting in the pews at Mass on Sunday. So anyway, my thought, just to offer this as a devil's advocate, Brian, is I would argue it's exactly the opposite, that the Catholic Church by far is doing more on a regular basis than anyone else. Maybe it's not talking about it as much, but when the rubber meets the road, you're going to find Catholics everywhere who are doing this in every town and hamlet all across the country.
Yeah, I'm certainly not. I'm not making an accusation. I agree with you. I'm raised Roman Catholic. I'm not presently Catholic, but I am certainly a Christian. So okay. I'm speaking generally, mm-hmm. the church generally in our culture, genuine believers in Jesus.
Yeah.
So I think I'll stick with my comment, all the while recognizing the dear work of the Catholic Church concerning unwed mothers, women in trauma and abuse, no doubt about it. But I think it's the nuance issue. That, you know, that life is complex. People are complex.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, Jesus saw people as multidimensional. You know, he shocked the people when he went to the woman in adultery, when he overturned the tables. When he was walking the earth, he always flipped the script. And I think that we in the church, we sort of fall into our camps politically. We fall into a certain way of thinking, and we think, well, that's how Jesus wants us to think. And again, I'm not talking about the moral absolute, but in other ways, we fail to really look at people in a complex way. And I think that shows up with this flag issue. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Have the flag up, Trumper. Don't. Well, you must be a leftist. I mean, it's juvenile.
I have witnessed that. I mean, Brian, I got to tell you, I get these oddball comments from people who say, you know, well, you're a big Trump supporter, or you're this or you're that. They have no earthly clue, you know, what my view might be on an issue, but they do fall into the trap that you're talking about, Brian. I admit that.
Right.
Well, anyway, thank you for calling. Hey, by the way, what would it take to get you back to the Catholic Church?
Oh, I'm certainly open. You know, it's been a journey. I was born again at college in a dramatic way. I was baptized Roman Catholic, and I had an attitude when I was born again of hostility towards the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. But since that happened, I recognized the authenticity, the majesty, the faithfulness of the Catholic Church over the centuries, and that is certainly appealing. Where I get into some struggle is the issues of justification, the issues of it is finished, the issues of does that make sense?
No, it does completely. I'm overdue for a break, Brian, but how about this? First of all, you have a standing invitation. I hope you'll call me again. I'd love to talk to you more. Also, if I may recommend a book to you, get a copy of Surprised by Truth. It's a book I edited, but the stories are what are important. There are 11 stories of people who made this journey, and they explain why. And a lot of it deals with theology. So justification, all of the issues that I'm sure are important to you, you'll find in this book. It was published in 1994. So you want to get the first one, Surprised by Truth. And maybe after you've had a chance to read that, we could have another talk. But I'm glad you called today, Brian. Thank you. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land's made for you and me.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values, and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Here's a little value added for your life. Maybe you've wondered, a lot of people wonder, how can I have free will if God knows everything? If God knows what I'm going to do, if God knows where I'm going to wind up, heaven or hell, do my prayers really matter? Can I really even have free will? The answer is yes. And if you want a good 7-minute explanation from the good Dominican friars of the Eastern Province, they're associated with the Thomistic Institute. They have a wonderful series of videos called Aquinas 101. I'm an avid fan of these things, and I subscribe, and it's free. And I, you know, every new one that comes out, I'm on that like, you know, Johnny on the spot. So I want to draw your attention to three of these videos that I posted on my Twitter feed this morning. The first one is, yes, you really do have free will. And here's how to explain it. So this is the Aquinas 101 video on freedom. Then the next one I suggest you watch that I posted just above that is, how does God's will fit in with your will? How is it that God has his sovereign will as God, and yet you're also free? How does that work, and how can you explain it? Well, there's a seven-minute video that explains that. It's called God's Will. And then the third in the series that I posted, now this, they have hundreds of these videos, so check them out on YouTube. But the third one I'd like you to watch, and I would suggest you watch them in this order, the third one is the biblical doctrine of predestination. You may not know, the Bible teaches predestination. Certain people are predestined to heaven. What, you say? Isn't that Calvin? No, it's not Calvinism. That's the Catholic faith. Predestination is part of the Catholic Church's teaching. Now, not double predestination, which is an error of Calvinism and its variants that are out there, which could be described in various ways, one of which would be that God creates certain people solely for the, not solely for the purpose of being damned, but with no hope of being saved. So this third video is on predestination. And in the space of 7 or 8 minutes, you're going to understand what it is. And I suggest you watch them in this order. Go to the first one I posted, which is on your free will. The second will be on God's will and how does that interact with your free will. And then the third one is predestination. And in the space of that time, you will be a whole lot more knowledgeable than you are now, even if you know some theology, even if you're biblically literate. But you'd like to know how to explain this to your kids and your coworkers and even just to yourself after watching these three videos. It'll make a big difference. Trust me on that. Let's go to Kurt now in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Welcome, Kurt.
Hey, Patrick. Thank you. So I just had a question about a friend of my brother's is an Episcopalian, and she's very devout, very Christian, but she's pondering converting to the Catholic faith.
Okay.
I'm just wondering what would be a great resource for her. She's very educated.
Okay. There are many good resources. I mentioned one a minute ago, Surprised by Truth, which is a collection of conversion testimonies of people who become Catholic. In full disclosure, I did edit that book, but really has nothing to do with me. It's the power of these stories that are very remarkable. So if you wanted to offer her a book that could really get her to think about some aspects of the church that maybe she didn't think of before, I would recommend that one. There are a number of people I know around the country, including Father Dwight Longenecker. He is a graduate of Bob Jones University. He has an interesting and circuitous route. He was a graduate of Bob Jones University in Greenville, South Carolina, mm-hmm. a hotbed of anti-Catholicism.
Right.
He wound up moving to England, where he decided to become Anglican, and he studied there and eventually was ordained as an Anglican priest, although keep in mind the Catholic Church does not regard Anglican holy orders as valid. But in any case, he was ordained an Anglican priest and then got married, and he might have been married before he was ordained an Anglican priest. But in any case, married with kids, the long and winding road leads him to the Catholic Church, the Whore of Babylon that he once thought of, and he wound up becoming Catholic, and then he was received not only into the church, but he was permitted to pursue the priesthood, and he was ordained a priest. So he has a blog. You'd have to look. I don't remember the name of it, but if you look up his name, Dwight Longenecker, he's a prolific writer, and there's quite a bit on his blog that deals with this issue, including from a perspective of somebody who once was Anglican. So that'd be another resource you can check out. And then the third one I'd suggest would be the Journey Home program by Marcus Grody, a good friend of mine. If you go to chnetwork.org, that's the Coming Home Network, you'll find the videos of his show called The Journey Home. And over the last, I don't know, 25, 30 years, however long it's been, he's interviewed many converts from Anglicanism, including clergy. And they're easy to find by just doing a search through the videos. So it's Coming Home Network. That's his organization. chnetwork.org is the website. And you'll find lots and lots of videos there of converts from Anglicanism.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. You're most welcome. Thank you, Kurt. Appreciate it. 888-914-9149. We go now to Marilyn in Kingston, New Jersey. Hello, Marilyn.
Hi, Patrick. Happy Taco Tuesday.
Happy Taco Tuesday to you.
thank you. I have two questions. I was just wondering, see, as I'm a convert, so I don't know everything.
I'm not a convert, and I don't know everything either, so we're in good company.
Okay. You seem to. Well, you seem to. The object that holds the precious body, the monstrous, where is that name from?
Ah, well, monstrance, M-O-N-S-T-R-A-N-C-E. Okay. So it ends in A-N-C-E. And that just comes from the Latin word for to show. So monstrare.
Oh.
And the reason it's called that is because, as you probably have seen, there is a little pane of glass behind which the host reposes, and you can see the host through the glass. So in other words, this is showing you Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament, hence the name.
Oh, okay. Is that a Greek name or?
That's a Latin word.
Latin word, okay.
Yeah, so monstro, not to be confused with monster, but monstro means I show. And that's
I
what
show.
That's from.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Okay, my second question is, I guess I just want your opinion, your thoughts. I really love the Catholic Church, and I really have learned to respect the whole idea of the priesthood. That being said, I have a little struggle with this one priest in our church, and he's done nothing. He's a wonderful priest, but I'm 67 years old, and this nice young man is about my son's age, and I just have a little I call him father. I do all the respect, but in my heart, I'm just thinking he's a
Kid.
A young guy like my like my son. Yeah.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. So yeah. In this case, the term father, of course, which is of venerable usage, it goes back to the early church, and it is a mark of respect for the office of presbyter. In fact, in the early church, when the office of presbyter or priest was not that prevalent, far more common were the deacons and bishops. And the bishops were known as father, papa. And so that's a custom that goes all the way back. And it nowadays we apply it specifically to Catholic priests. But it's a respect for the office as opposed to the man. And so it's a good habit to be in to refer to the priest as father because of the office that he holds and what he represents. Even if he himself is really young, or maybe doesn't live up to that calling, it's still a very important title to use. So I understand why you hesitate. Okay. But in this case, just remember that when you're saying father, you're not thinking of this young man as your father, nor are you suggesting that he's wise beyond his years. I suppose he might be, but that doesn't fit. I mean, that's not a connotation that's necessary when you call the priest father.
Okay, so it's more like a title, the way my son is a chef.
Yeah, you can look at it that way. It's a little different, but yeah, so the idea of calling priests father, we first see this in Matthew's gospel, where Jesus says, call no one on earth father. So he says something that suggests that maybe we shouldn't call priests father. That's in Matthew 23, verse 9. Call no one on earth your father, for you have one father who is in heaven. Now, taken at face value, of course, that might seem as though we were doing something wrong by calling priest father. But St. Paul himself, he referred to himself as father. He says, though you may have many guides to Christ, yet you do not have many fathers. For I became your father in Christ Jesus through the gospel. That's from 1 Corinthians chapter 4. So he identifies the ministry that he performed for the people as one of a father. And he says, I urge you to imitate me. And that, I think, extends to imitate him calling himself our father, so we would do the same thing. But we see that Jesus didn't mean that literally, because the New Testament is replete with examples of the apostolic writers, as well as people like St. Stephen, the first martyr of the church, to refer to men with a religious title of father. You know, so we see that in the book of Acts, in Acts chapter 7, where Stephen was about to be stoned to death, And he refers to them as my brothers and fathers. Listen to me. And we're told in that same passage he was filled with the Holy Spirit. And he even saw Jesus sitting at the right hand of the Father in heaven. So he's speaking this word under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. So these are some of the clues that we can deduce to see that Jesus did not mean literally don't call anyone on earth Father. For that matter, anyone who's got a master's degree would have to tear it up because the verse 8 says in Matthew 23, call no one on earth master. And then it says in verse 9, call no one on earth Father. And then in verse 10, it says, call no one on earth teacher. So in that case, everyone with a doctorate would have to avoid being called doctor because doctor is one of the Latin words for teacher. So Jesus was referring to the corruption of the scribes and the Pharisees in the way in which they sought for the people to see them, even in a certain sense, almost higher than God, because they thought they could avoid or cancel out some of the commandments of God. Jesus gives an example of this in Matthew chapter 15 about the traditions of men that nullify the word of God. And one of them was the Korban rule that the scribes and Pharisees had concocted as a way to avoid honoring your father and mother financially if they needed your help, because you could Korban your money, you could dedicate it or set it aside for the temple so that technically you didn't have any money to give to your parents when they needed help, but in reality you had the use of your money. And Jesus condemned that as a tradition of men. So when you consider calling priests father, chances are you'll run into that question if someone's a non-Catholic and they say, well, why do you call him father anyway? And they may bring up that particular passage. I hope that's helpful, Marilyn. Thank you. Break time, and we'll come right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Now, we just had a holiday, and there's another big one coming, as you know, Christmas, and I've got some important news for you. And this is no joke. This is for real, and this is going to affect you and your family, having to do with Christmas and Christmas presents and things of that nature. So please don't tune out now. There's something very important I want to share with you when we come back from this quick timeout on Taco Tuesday. I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back now. As promised, I've got some info for you. And this is real, okay? I'm not joking. I wish I were. Give you an example. I went to go get some chlorine for the pool. You know, just simple chlorine tablets. And I went to my pool supplier and I said, hey, I'd like some chlorine. And they said, sorry, we don't have any. What? You're a pool place. That's what you sell. And they said, I know. But apparently there was a fire in a chlorine factory. And I have a hard time believing this. But the owner of the pool place said there's like two major chlorine tablet, chlorine-related manufacturing plants in the U.S. One of them had a fire, and we can't get it. Our suppliers can't get it to us. And maybe there's, you know, shipping container delays and things from stuff that's coming from overseas. But in any case, if you have a pool, I encourage you, if you can get some chlorine, get some chlorine. And get some extra chlorine if you can, because you may not be able to get chlorine for your pool in many parts of the country until maybe late this month or into next month. That's what my pool company said. We're not going to have any until like the middle of August at the earliest. So word to the wise, that's all. But that ties into this bigger issue, and that is what's going on with all kinds of things all around the country, but indeed all around the world. The U.S. and Europe are being hit very hard by delays, and major retailers are running out of things. And Reuters has got an article that should get your attention, especially with regard to Christmas. And I'd like to just give you the punchline first. Moms, grandmoms, you're typically the ones who are doing Christmas shopping for the family. Start now. And if you can hunt and peck and find some things now, do it now, would be my advice, because long about October, November, you may not be able to find the stuff that you're looking for. And yes, I know Christmas is not about gift giving. I know that. I understand that. But it's also part of the tradition. So Jesus is the reason for the season. Let's establish that. I'm not taking the focus off of where it belongs. But part of the way that we celebrate this holiday, this birth of Jesus, is to give each other gifts. In any case, whether you're Christian or not, doesn't matter. You're still going to be affected. This is what Reuters has to say. Suppliers to Walmart, Target, and Amazon, and other major retailers told Reuters that they're placing holiday orders for Chinese-made merchandise weeks earlier this year, as global shipping backlogs threaten to leave many gift buyers empty-handed this Christmas shopping season. Reuters surveyed a dozen suppliers and retailers of everything from toys to computer equipment in the U.S. and Europe. All are expecting weeks-long delays. Now, right at the moment, they're saying weeks-long. It could extend beyond that. But they're currently expecting weeks-long delays in holiday inventory due to shipping bottlenecks, including a global container shortage and the recent COVID-related closure of the southern Chinese port of Yantian, which serves manufacturers near Shenzhen. How do you like my Chinese pronunciation? The risk for retailers is a rash of out-of-stock items, just as shoppers are ready to open their wallets to buy toys and clothing and other merchandise. Isaac Larian, chief executive of the L.A.-based MGA Entertainment Company, which sells LOL Surprise, Bratz, Little Tykes, and other toy brands on Amazon and also at Walmart and Target, says it's going to be a major, major mess. His company has toys stuck in hundreds of containers in China. If he can't get enough inventory for his retail clients, it's going to hurt the Christmas sales big time. Shipping log jams are due to more than just the backlog in China, which is considered, in this particular port, Yantian, is considered Amazon's number one Chinese seaport, accounting for 32.4% of all shipments handled by Amazon. And while Yantian port reopened in June, this would be just a few weeks ago, June 24th, a shortage of containers was still constraining full activity. Globally, cargo ships are overbooked, containers are stranded in the wrong places, and ports are congested. Products are piling up on factory floors and warehouse parking lots, on seaport docks and at rail yards, threatening more backups than last year's holiday shipageddon, as they called it, when many items arrived after Christmas. Retailers generally, according to Reuters, are selling goods as fast as they can bring them in. This according to Jason Miller, associate professor of supply chain management at Michigan State University. He says their sales are so high right now that they're unable to build inventory substantially. If that torrid clip continues, retailers, excluding auto-related operators, would have to add about $65.1 billion in inventory to be in the same pre-holiday inventory to sales position that they were 2 years ago. Andy Bond, chief executive of Pepco Group, which owns British discount retailer Poundland, told Reuters separately, "It's definitely a day-to-day challenge and it's a headache that we're facing." Clothing sellers also are looking at different options, including shipping by air as opposed to by shipping containers. Christmas-themed inventory might be here for Thanksgiving weekend, and it might not be, according to Balsam Hill CEO Mac Harmon, who sells high-end artificial Christmas trees and other holiday decor. Another retailer says, "We're hundreds of containers behind where we should be at this point." And it goes on and on and on. And both in Europe, but as well, maybe even more so here in the United States, Walmart is having this problem. Target is having this problem. Even Amazon is having this problem. So I offer this to you for your consideration because it's happening and it's going to affect the way in which you do your holiday shopping. And I believe this also, to some extent, is extending into the grocery section as well, in terms of the kinds of things you can get, if you can get them, and then the things that you can get, but they're super sky high now because prices are going up. So there's word to the wise. Think about that chlorine for your pool. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Tracy in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Hi, Tracy.
Sorry, Patrick.
It's okay. Yep. All is forgiven.
I'm here.
Welcome.
Excuse me. Sorry. Thank you. Good morning. I was calling regarding your concern about the flying the American flag.
Yeah.
And what it become, what's become to me. So, excuse me, I had to run from the other room.
No problem.
I've always been a flag flyer. I've always been a proud American. We prayed, you know, we said the American League pledged to the American flag every morning at school. So now we're in a condo. I can't fly a flag anymore. So I have a flag dress that I started
put it in your window.
4th of July.
Put it in your window. That way they can't hassle
well,
you.
Well, I do have a little cling. Yeah, but I hang it from inside the window, and I did do that. I have a cling thing, but it's not like. And we are allowed bunting, so we have our red, white, and blue bunting on the balcony. But so anyway, I thought. I came up with the bright idea of wearing this flag dress every day last year from the 4th of July through the election.
Mm.
It's a nylon dress, so it's like
you might want to have multiple copies of that dress, right? You don't want to wear the same dress every day.
You know what actually I have is a couple of real good friends. I acquired two more of them shortly after they
so
found
what,
out I was
what
wearing
the looks
the
do
same
you get when you walk
having...
out there, when you're walking through JCPenney's wearing your flag dress? What do people say?
Well, that's exactly what came to mind when you brought that up, because people would say, oh, I love your dress. Go Trump. Love your dress. And other people would say, huh, I know who you're voting for.
Just because you were
just
patriotic.
Because.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah.
I know what you mean.
It was sad. But it was enlightening. It's a sad testimonial. But I've always been a flag flyer. And so it occurred to me to ask you about flying the Gadsden flag. And
don't
I also
tread on me.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Let's pause on this for a minute. This is interesting because, as I was talking about earlier, even just the American flag by itself now is deemed by many to be white supremacist and racist. And certainly you are conservative and probably anti-abortion if you have an American flag. All those things that the people on the left hate. And I don't mean to suggest that we shouldn't all hate white supremacy. I'm not suggesting otherwise. I'm just saying that they read into it things that, as you yourself are an example, are not there, are not necessarily there in any case. So the Gadsden flag, don't tread on me, I would say, would be even more of a flashpoint for somebody who's already conditioned to look with suspicion upon somebody who's got an American flag, much less to have one of those flags. I would think they would be even more jaundiced in the way they would look at you.
Well, my question for you is, you brought up like an aspect of almost dissension by not flying the red, white, and blue, by having a different, like the back the Blue Lives flag and stuff
or
like that.
Blue
stuff
Lives Matter.
Flag falling down.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'm still, now I have a license plate border because I can't have that flag here either. Anyway.
What happens, Tracy, when people who are in a benign, nonpartisan, political way, they're just proud of the United States of America. They love their country. There's nothing wrong with that. And they now become fearful of expressing that natural gratitude for our founding fathers and the forefathers and foremothers who brought us this country that is so great in so many ways. It's not perfect. What happens when people, maybe like you, become fearful of expressing that publicly because they're afraid of the backlash? And then patriotism withers and dies.
So this is the benefit, I think, of this, because as we drive around and walk around, and I like to say hi to people and stuff, so I think it kind of shows us that there is a camaraderie. There are still others who are going to be willing to fight and possibly die to keep America the best place where people still die to get to.
Now, when you say fight and die, I'm assuming you're referring to like the armed forces, right? Is that what you mean? Or no?
Well, that's what I would like to only intend to mean. But there's an underlying fear that there are evil forces trying to bring people against one another.
And there's
a possibility. There's always, look through history, there's always a possibility of this. I remember Rwanda when my boys were little, and nobody was allowed to watch the news in our house because it was so awful. But we got to.
Well, this country was born in revolution. We came out of revolution. I hope we never see another revolution. I've got to run, Tracy. Forgive me, but the music's playing, and that means I'm out of time. But thank you for calling, and stay safe as you wear your flag dress. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. I'll be right back. I've got plenty more ahead right after this, including how do we get that phrase under God in the Pledge of Allegiance? I'll tell you how that happened right after this.
Hi, Father Rocky, thank you for having this nightly rosary prayer.
Live, interactive, the Family Rosary Across America.
If you're just tuning in your car somewhere in America, you're wondering what on earth is going on, this is the Family Rosary Across America. My name is Father Rocky. I'm in Green Bay, and Karen Moran's my co-host. She's in Phoenix, and we've got tens of thousands of people tuning in around the country right now, bringing their prayer intentions to us, and we're all hoping for miracles, and maybe you need one right now, too, and we're going to pray for you.
I would like to pray for the end of the coronavirus, my family, and all the kids with cancer.
The Family Rosary Across America with Father Rocky.
I just ask God to bless you, Father Rocky, Relevant Radio, and also all the listeners. I love praying the rosary with everyone.
The Family Rosary Across America with Father Rocky, 7 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
What we don't talk about is all the great things that are going on.
And that's why Relevant Radio is determined to bring people things which are uplifting and educational and inspiring and lead people to God.
Everything that you folks do is critically important ordinarily, but in a time like this, it becomes exponentially more important because people can take the time and listen to what other people are dealing with and pray with Father Rocky and the whole team. It's phenomenal.
Bringing Christ to the world through the media. Relevant Radio.